Apple just posted record quarterly earnings, but behind the numbers, Tim Cook admitted something very interesting. Apple Intelligence is a money pit they haven't even figured out how to price. Their plan? Quietly bake the compute costs into your iCloud Plus subscription and launch a monthly iPhone program where you never own the device. Forever payments for things you used to buy once. Big stories. Let's get into it. And with that, we're going to introduce our panel for today. And with me, I have, I'll start in a random order today. So I'll start with Marty. How are you doing? And thanks for being here.
You know, I am awake. I have a couple of weeks off here. And So I swap between sitting in front of my computer and messing around with some tech stuff and taking naps. So I am firmly embedded in nap taking all day long, which that is great.
Sounds amazing, nap taking.
Nice. Oh, yeah.
Anything fun you're doing on the tech side that you're playing with?
Oh, I'm trying to do some design on my, but mainly on my desktop, in order to access apps better. I have started another podcast. I'd like to call it a partner podcast for Fade to Chat, where Fade to Chat is a review of a movie from the 30s, 40s, 50s, and 60s. Coming up Monday, it will be Bridge on the River Kwai. Partner podcast is one that I do that's a solo shot, which I've never done solo direct to the camera. And it is a counselor's view of one of the scenes in that film. So it talks about the mental health issues.
So for movies at that time period. That's interesting.
Yeah, and we're going to talk about the last scene in Bridge on the River Kwai when Alec Guinness's character realizes what's happened. And there's a whole psychological process that goes behind that. So that's an eight-minute kind of drop that I do. And I just was challenged to do one that was look directly in the camera and talk.
That sounds really, really interesting. I'm going to check it out. Okay. I haven't watched that movie forever.
It's called One Scene. The Camera and the Couch. Yeah.
Very cool. All right. It's probably on your podtalk.net, right?
Not yet. The other thing I guess I got to do between naps.
Okay.
I got to put it on there.
Good. But you can find it already. That's good. Yeah. Person you can also find dealing with some cat troubles, as we heard in the pre-show. Ben, how are you doing?
Welcome to the nap hangout.
The nap hangout. Oh, I love that. That would be cool. Not very interesting to watch, probably, but...
all snuggles, I mean, all the time. I think there's a market for that.
It'll be the most interactive podcast ever.
But only on Only Jeff's.
Yeah.
Yes, only on Only Jeff's. Or over the premium plan on Only Chuck's, since he's not
here. That's true. So Ben, how are things going?
Besides the cat troubles, I can't complain. Start a new job in a couple weeks here.
Nice. All right, cool.
Finally got an iPad, in case I don't hate.
Yeah, we talked about that. It's like not a folio case, which, they're not very good from Apple usually, unfortunately.
Or anyone.
I'm not too sure. I think there are some that are decent, but Apple's definitely don't hold up very well.
Yeah.
We'll talk about Apple enough in this show. The other person who could have cat troubles, but hopefully doesn't, Jeff, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. And actually, I don't know where my office manager went. Well,
probably went out to take care of some business.
Probably made a catnip shop run or something.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, it's Colorado, so for sure.
Yeah. all right. I have to share something that I'm very proud of. Mm-hmm. I had a friend the other day who had gone to look at my Borb art and asked, "Where's the pride flag?" And I'm like, yes. It's in my brain now. So I did it. I made a Pride Borb flag.
Uh-huh.
And it's on my merch store now, and cool. I love how it turned out. So I'm bragging because I'm just so pleased with how the flag turned out.
Yeah, that sounds amazing. I know which friend that was, by the way.
I'm now picturing a Pride Borg flag.
There's also an idea.
I mean, resistance is futile.
Yes.
Actually, it would be... I can picture... Yes. The flag right now. Yeah.
might have some IP issues, but yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you can always ask, right? You have connections. You can always ask.
That's true.
I told my wife about it this morning and then opened up your merch site to show her the flag.
Oh, nice.
She has friends who I think we're going to maybe get a shirt for. But it might be the flag. She's got some ideas. So,
well, like I said previously, if she comes up with ideas for stuff that she thinks should be available, I'll see if it's something that I can make. And then I am happy to add whatever to the store.
Very cool.
I aim to please.
You aim to please. Well, that's a good starting point in life in general. Yeah, I'm also okay. I'm just very, very hot. We got the second heat wave rolling around Europe right now. Not a lot of water available. Austria is mostly, like, you know, people think Austria are like green everywhere, whatever. Right now it's more brown. It's like, I was flying on Sunday and my flight instructor was like, okay, like, we're going to do like a, it's like a safety landing, it's called. So basically, like, you don't have, like, it's not an emergency yet, but you kind of want to land before, I don't know, before you run out of fuel or whatever. Or you can't come back to the airports, and all the airports around you are also closed because, I don't know, fog or something. So he was like, okay, where do you land? Like, green or brown? I'm like, brown. Because at this time of the year, brown is like, those are harvested fields usually. Well, right now, even the grass is brown, so everything's brown.
Land anywhere you want.
Land anywhere you want. Yeah, which I did. I mean, you don't actually land. You just, like, you approach the ground and then you abort and go around. So, like, you don't actually land on the grass. But yeah, I was so. Austria is more brown than green right now. Yeah, as everywhere. Anyway, speaking about green, we had some interesting news from Apple today, and we have even two stories about that. Let's start with yours, Marty, because that comes directly from the green side. Apple just had their quarterly earnings call, and there were some interesting tidbits in there, and one you brought especially about like Apple AI. And you muted yourself.
It's going to be part of our hung jury discussion, I think. So I don't want to get too deep into it. But one of the things that came out in the earnings call as people questioned Tim Cook was, how are you going to cover iCloud Plus subscriptions, and particularly dealing with the tokens needed to run SAI? And they haven't quite worked out how to market that. This article in Apple Insider talks about some options that could be done where the higher tier iCloud Plus get much more tokens in proportion to the lower tier tokens, and how that's going to work. So daily usage limits will be tiered to the user's iCloud subscription tier is what's being suggested in this article.
But yeah, and what Tim said, frankly, on the call.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It sounds like they really haven't crunched the numbers as to whether this is going to be a moneymaker or a empty bucket.
frankly, they prefer the term loss leader.
Loss leader.
Yeah, okay. Well...
Yeah.
Frankly, I think Apple can figure that out over a couple of months of loss leading of what they're going to need to do. It'd be better if they came and not had to make adjustments in it and said, hey, you've got this marvelous free thing.
Yeah.
Oops, now we got to charge you for it.
Yeah. So the question on the earnings call was actually started out with capital expenditures. So basically like investing in data centers, right? I mean, that's what everybody's doing in the AI world right now. And whether Apple because they have had, let's say, reasonable CapEx so far. And I mean, it has grown a bit, but not crazy. Where other companies have done, I mean, they've basically lost all their money in CapEx because they're just investing like crazy in data centers. And Apple basically said, we have a mix, right? We have our own data centers. They will use Google's data centers, which then like they don't pay in CapEx for. They just pay like for usage, basically. And they also do on device, and they haven't figured it out. They're thinking that they will do higher tier iCloud Plus subscriptions, as you said, and you will pay for that if you need more, like for the more advanced users, for the pro users. But they haven't figured out the mix yet, because they've only gotten like a couple months of data now. I mean, it's like, was it like 2 months almost since they launched it for developers, and about not even a month for the on the public beta. They don't have a lot of real usage data, like how much will be on device, how much will maybe hit Google's data centers versus how much will hit their own data centers.
He called it uncertain, and it could be he should have said it's unannounced, meaning maybe it's maybe it's a Nunya decision, like it's Nunya business. How much money we're gonna make.
But Tim is usually like, or Apple in general, if it's unannounced, they will simply tell you they don't talk about future things. It's very simple. They're usually like, we don't talk about future products, we don't talk about future announcements. So the fact that he even admitted as much that they haven't even fully decided that, I think tells me that they really haven't fully decided. I mean, this was an earnings call, so like they're not allowed to lie usually. They can not tell you something or bend the truth a little bit maybe by like going around it, but they cannot flat out lie. So I think they really don't know yet.
In the article, it speculates that they could be token packs or AI-specific subscriptions. And to me, that sounds like Candy Crush. I don't need tokens, subscriptions.
Yeah. No, I think they will probably add maybe a tier to iCloud Plus and say, okay, like there's a iCloud Plus Ultra level or whatever, or it's the 10 terabyte level or whatever, like, because right now I think it's mostly tied to storage. So maybe they'll do it that way and simply say, like, for the really pro users that are using it a lot and simply need more than what's available for the daily usage, for the normal people's daily usage. I think they said during WWDC even that they were envisioning the normal daily usage that like an average person would just do with like asking a random question to Siri every now and then would be completely free.
The thing is, it's the SAI hasn't been fully realized yet and hasn't been fully deployed.
Yes.
So I can't wait till that sucker really hits the ground and people are using it. Then they have a better idea what it's going to be.
Yeah.
It is really all speculation at this point.
But it's interesting, as I said, that Apple really talks about it this openly, because that is not what Apple usually does.
He's obviously pleased with the product.
Oh, of course. They were also pleased with the product a year ago, so
yeah. And historically, Apple was pleased with .Mac and iTools and Hockey Puck mice and iPod socks.
Until they weren't.
Yep.
Apple Maps.
I'm saving most of my comments for when we get to the drop.
Yes. Yeah.
Because I do have thoughts on this.
The drop. Okay. Interesting. The hang jury today will be a different topic.
Hang jury.
We have a different topic for hang jury today.
Oh, we do? So, I thought this was our topic.
No, this is our feed topic for the hang jury. I have a different topic today. We would not talk about Apple this time.
Okay. Well, then in that case, I'll share my thoughts now.
Go for it.
I think, Marty, you're on the right track with this. And I think that there are some weak assumptions in the article that you shared.
Mm-hmm.
The sentence that really, or the paragraph that really stands out for me is, I expect that there will be a hybrid system in place eventually. Sure, having token usage tiers tied to iCloud Plus is fine, but requiring users to pay for storage they don't need is silly. Okay, they don't. I agree. Don't make people pay for what they don't need, but Apple is into package deals for their services.
Yes. Yeah. Apple One, you pay for, I don't know, Apple Arcade or Apple News, whether you're using it or not.
Right.
Or Fitness Plus, for example.
Yeah. Yes, you pay for a package that invariably has one element that you're not going to use. I don't see this as any different. But I do think that Apple will likely offer like token bundles as add-ons, and I think the idea that floated around here, see how I tied that into clouds, about like a premium level, like iCloud Pro or something for the hardcore users. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I could see a new tier coming in specifically to address that audience.
Yeah, I mean, for me, the interesting question is, why didn't Apple add another subscription? It's not as if it's already confusing enough, right? Because we have Apple One, which covers more the services side, like what we just mentioned. Then you have iCloud Plus, which is included in Apple One, but also you can buy extra or like separately. Mm-hmm. Then we have now, we'll talk about that in a second, the new upgrade program thing for Apple, the lease program. Mm-hmm. Probably forgetting some programs that Apple still has. I mean, you can also subscribe to everything individually. So adding another thing probably wouldn't have been too confusing. So why did they tie it to iCloud specifically?
And that could change.
That's what everybody has.
Yeah, I mean, true.
Yeah, some capacity, at some point.
Maybe that's true. Maybe that is what more people have. So maybe Apple One is not... it's not what most people have, but like iCloud is, everybody has it because either you got it through Apple One or you have it separately.
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, actually, that makes sense.
Yeah. If there are additional tiers, if there are additional tiers, I would expect them to be announced sometime in 2027.
Mm-hmm.
If not waiting all the way to WWDC. Apple needs the data, and quite frankly, putting a bunch of new costs in the middle of an OS cycle doesn't look the best.
I mean, they've done it in the past. I remember Apple One came somewhere early in the year, I think.
This is true.
Yeah.
And they did just give us price hikes on hardware.
They did. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it'll be interesting to see. It's just, I was wondering, like, why iCloud Plus? iCloud Plus has always been, or for a long time, been a weird subscription anyway, because it's like, as I said, it's storage, but it's also, you get the, what was it? The private relay, I think, and email and stuff like that. So it's kind of been a weird conglomeration of things.
Well, if you really stretch it, you can say, oh, well, this applies to the cloud services that you're using.
Okay, true. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, versus more content services, maybe. Yeah, that's true. I mean, Apple One is more content. I mean, it does include iCloud, but it's more content service bundle.
Yeah, so I guess you could say Apple One is one bundle with content and cloud.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Which brings us to, will they include also hardware eventually in Apple One? because that is the next story from Ben about another new service that Apple, or upgraded, changed service that Apple is offering now.
So, as we all know, Apple raised prices not too long ago, which may have been kind of the precipice between affordability and inaffordability for some people. Well, Apple has a solution to that. They teamed up with a subprime loan company, Klarna, to have the Apple upgrade program. First off, this will not cover low-end devices, so Marty will not be covering it on the Neo Notebook.
He still could.
But mid-rangers like the standard iPhone, MacBook Air, that type of thing, you'll get up to 36 months in payments. Mm-hmm. This will be a lease program. You will not own the device until you pay for the final payment. You can do a trade-in to lower your payments.
Mm-hmm.
When that lease is up, you have the option to return it for a new device or buy it outright.
Mm-hmm.
From what I've seen, some other
With buy it outright, it means you the payments you've already like made count toward the normal regular Apple price. So if whatever the MacBook is, let's say $2,000, you paid, let's say, $1,500 already in lease payments, then to own it, you pay $500 and you're done.
Yeah. Yeah. Plus, this will never be, it will never be more than list price. And this is zero interest, which makes this a more interesting buy for people who do not or who aren't able to get that big chunk of money to either go up to the next tier or basically just get the machine that they want.
Or who don't want to, like, I mean, have the cash flow reduced that way. Like, I mean, you if you pay up front, that's $2,000 gone, right? If it's $2,000.
Yeah.
If you spread it out, you can use that money to, I don't know, invest in the stock market, for example, and make money that way. So, like, for companies, even, that might be interesting.
Especially for smaller businesses.
Small business, yeah.
That may not be able to do those business-to-business type contracts.
Yeah, true.
You know, I'm seeing so many people look at this program the way we're discussing about it right now.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, this is a different thing. This isn't about, can I find a less expensive way to finance my Apple gear? And it's more of, I'm the person who always wants to have the new products.
Mm-hmm.
And since I'm going to be making payments on them anyhow, I will do the lease.
Yeah.
So you do a 12-month lease on your iPhone and your Mac and mm-hmm. your Apple Watch. And then every 12 months, you trade them back in and you get the new models. And so you're the person that always has the new thing. And since you knew you were going to be paying for stuff perpetually anyhow, you're saving money in a sense, because you're not paying full price for a product. You're paying for it just for the time you have it.
And you don't have
Where to. Have I seen this idea before?
Yeah. And you also.
Car.
Yeah, true. And you also don't have to deal with the trade-in at the end, right? I mean, fine, like either trading it to Apple or finding like a third-party trade-in party or selling it to whatever. Like it's literally you just return it and done. I mean, that's what the upgrade program was, but now it's available with more devices in the US.
Yes. Yeah. And the trade-in part, if you look at it, I mean, the way a lease works, you have, practically speaking, negotiated the trade-in price at the start, not at mm-hmm. the end. because it's all laid out and the numbers are very clear.
Yeah.
And you make your payments, and then after 12 months or 24 or 36, depending on how long you want that lease to go and what and how long they'll let it go, then you just trade it in and get a new one, whatever it is.
Yeah, exactly. The only slight downside, of course, is you're locked into that whatever term you had, right? Because it's a lease. So if you said, I'm going to do 12 iPhone payments at, let's say, $30 a month, if you after 2 weeks, you have to cancel it, but after 15 days, you're locked into that payment. And if you want out, you can get out, but you have to still pay the rest of whatever payments you committed to.
Yeah, I'm the only person on this panel that's not excited about this. Because for me, the question is, who does this attract? Well, it could attract us, but we come from a different level of opportunity in most cases than people who I think it's really going to attract that don't have that level of opportunity. They also have a higher risk of debt issues and failing on loans. And so this for me is kind of a Carney thing. They shouldn't use Klarna. They should use Carney. And, you know, just kind of pull them in. Here's the rings. All you got to do is get one ring around one of the milk bottles and you'll win a prize. And it never works for them. The other issue is people who are price sensitive will be price sensitive and more likely take the risk of not having it covered with AppleCare, because I don't want to pay an extra $7 a month for AppleCare on this thing or whatever it's going to be.
True.
I want to get that really nice iPhone for $35, not $42. And then you get in a position where if that thing gets damaged or broken, and you try to hand it in, you're not getting the full value of the phone. You're getting the repair after that.
Yeah, and you might have to pay for the repair.
Yeah, and that could be very expensive. So I think of it from, I work with a lot of students. I'm a faculty member. I've seen their phones. This kind of thing is very attractive to them. It's also they crack screens and things they can't afford once they do it and problems. I fear that this is, I'm not afraid of the people coming in. I'm afraid for the people coming in this service, that they're going to be higher risk in loan, which is, you know, Apple's kind of stepped that back and kind of said, oh, I got a guy you can talk to get this. And it happens to be Klarna.
Yes.
And so, yeah, that's my fear about it. That it is, you know, for Jeff says, for people who want the brand new greatest thing, that's sort of an image thing. For folks who can afford it,
sure,
they get it. For folks who can't afford it, they might get trapped in a lease or in a issue.
Yeah.
I don't think that I think less than half of them will realize that they have a balloon payment at the end if they want to own the damn thing.
Yes. Yeah.
So I just see, I don't see trouble for Apple. I see trouble for the reputation of Apple.
Yeah, but I mean, it's already that's already happened, right? Because the upgrade program has been around in the US for quite a while.
The upgrade program has some locked in set prices that you have to pay higher than what the lease program would be, which is what makes the lease program attractive. You get AppleCare with it.
The new program. In the old program, the higher price was because AppleCare was included.
Yes.
And so this is a different that was a different program than a lease program. For me to buy into that, I knew I was paying $150 a month for a laptop.
Yeah.
And when I did do that, I would, and you can do this with the lease program, I would after 3 or 4 months go, here's a chunk of money. Let me just buy out that.
Yeah. And you can do that even now. Like, you can simply give them the rest of the payment and you own the device. Like, it's not a problem. if you want to.
Yeah, but I come from a point of privilege
where you can.
I have that flexibility in my funding.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That's, yeah, exactly. That's my concern about this.
Yeah. So I have a question. Why do you think Apple is doing that? Like, what's the reason for them?
I have a hypothesis.
So more devices.
Do share.
Ben hit on the core of it. This opens up their program for getting in at a lower start price to a wider range of their products.
But couldn't they have done it with the existing program? They have what was it? Was some bank behind it? Citigroup, something like that.
Citibank or something.
Well, something like that,
But see, doing it this way, it gives them more flexibility with who they are getting product to. Ben hit on a really important part of this a few minutes ago, which is the small business market. Mm-hmm. And I'll add into that the freelancer market. Mm-hmm. These are markets where having the most recent hardware is a competitive advantage for a lot of people and companies.
Yeah, there's also tax advantages.
There's a reason why big companies don't buy their computers outright. They're on lease programs.
Yeah,
and making it easier for the small players, if you will, to be able to get into a program like that, where Apple's benefiting directly, of course they would. I mean, they have probably, of course they have. They've looked at the numbers that the all-inclusive service providers are offering. You know, they come in and they handle all your tech needs. They make sure that your phone systems work, and they provide you all your hardware. And so you're leasing from those companies. Those companies are reaping the benefits of that lease.
Yep.
Now Apple gets in on that action, and they've been more active in their business programs.
Yeah.
And so this makes it much easier to tie all of that together for them.
Yeah.
Marty's concerns, absolutely valid. But I think for a lot of those people, Marty, if they are looking at iPhone specifically, a lot of those people may be the kind of people that are actually going to look to their cell service carrier for the free phone deal that goes along with their package.
That's true. Mm-hmm. There's a secondary, I think, benefit to Apple. Klarna is the iPhone program has been, I think, for the most part, only available in the US. I think exclusively only in the US. I think it never went anywhere else, as far as I remember. Maybe Canada, something like that. But it never left, basically, Northern America. Klarna is an international company. They are operating in Europe. They're operating, I think, in also probably in Asia and so on these days. If Apple wanted to extend the existing program because the bank behind it is not working in other countries, they would have had a hard time doing so because you need like a financial institution behind it, and they would have needed to partner with someone else and do that. By switching now to Klarna, they can simply start offering that eventually in other countries and just be like, yeah, it's the same. It's Klarna. Like, it's already available there. It's already an existing brand. People have accounts and all of that. So I think that's a secondary benefit. Go, Marty.
No, I'm agreeing with you. I think that's a super important point.
My concern is when something goes belly up on some customers, they're not going to blame Klarna. They're going to blame Apple. And, you get somebody dissatisfied, they're going to tell on the average 26 other people. You get somebody satisfied, they might not say anything.
But here's the thing, Marty. The program is Apple's program. It's not Klarna's. There's literally, I think, a little somewhere, like with the bank before, there's a little sentence somewhere. It's like, oh, this is operated by Klarna. You'd get it from Apple. Apple is front and center. Apple does the support. It's just backed by Klarna. And I think that's so probably why. So that they still own the relationship, they own the support, they own any issues that come up, because they know that it would literally anyway be their reputation, even if it was fully Klarna.
Yeah, well, yeah. And so when I'm a customer who's gotten in a lease program, and something goes wrong with my phone, like I drop it or it's cracked or I scratch a lens or whatever, and then I turn it back in because the lease is up and Apple wants to charge me an extra $300 for it, I'm not going to say, when I tell that story, it's going to be, Apple did this, Apple did that. Not, I dropped my phone in the audacity if they wanted to charge $300 for a screen change when I could take it down to the kiosk at the mall and get it done for $100.
You should have done that before you turned your phone in.
Well, it would not have been Apple.
It's not official.
Which is one of the reasons Klarna agreed to this deal.
Of course.
It's being backed by Apple.
Yeah, exactly. Like, Klarna still makes money from that somehow. So Apple shares some of the profits with them. Must be, because otherwise they wouldn't do it. So there's no extra cost for you, but somehow Apple is still paying for it. So they, like, it seems to be worth it for them to share, like, give some to Klarna whilst maintaining this program. Let's talk about something else. Also money related. We have a lot of money topics today, one way or another. Elon Musk launched something new that, like, it's Elon. Jeff, it's your story.
All right. So Elon has launched X Money. So that's his payment finance app service thing. And so this brings him full circle in a manner of speaking, because before everyone
because he likes
money, and he's a creep, and what could possibly go wrong? but before people really knew his name, he was trying to launch a company that he was going to call X that would be this. And he couldn't bring it together because Elon. And down the hall in the same office building, there was this other startup company that was actually doing it. And so he bought into the company, and that company was PayPal. And then eventually people were like, oh, Elon Musk started PayPal. No, it was already a thing. He bought into it. So he never actually did the thing he wanted, which is get his own payment transaction company going. And now here you go. He's got this. So, it's set up so that in a sense it runs like a bank. You get your paycheck. Mm-hmm. You can have it auto-deposited into X, and then you just manage all of your transactions through X. So basically doing what you do with a bank today, but with a not bank that's run by Elon.
With a not bank that's run by two people in a basement somewhere who have no clue what they're doing. Because the people who know already left.
Right. And when you have your X card, your credit card, well, you're going to be very limited in where you use it, because I'm going to call it a pretend card, because why not? You're not going to be able to use it outside the United States. And I think the only way you can actually effectively use it at retailers is if you hook it in like a debit account into Apple Pay or Google Pay.
Interesting. Yeah. But Jeff, everybody in the world is going to love this and is going to immediately on board, and you're going to be able to pay with this everywhere, right?
It's going to be fantastic.
It talks about a physical X-branded Visa debit card usable at any ATM.
So it's a Visa card. Okay, then it works globally. Well, mostly. Visa is not as widespread as MasterCard is.
Oh, I thought it was limited, to the United States.
Senator Elizabeth Warren has publicly raised concerns about consumer and financial stability risk, considering Musk's track record of
attacks. Yes. Well, I mean, here's that's the thing. Legit. Yeah. New York State and Massachusetts will not give him basically financial licenses to operate in those states.
Okay, so then maybe I misunderstood the part that I read. And it's not that you can't use it worldwide. It's that there are places throughout the United States where you'll be prohibited from using this.
Yes.
Yeah.
You probably can't get it in those states, right?
Yeah.
Those states are too liberal. It rejects the card automatically.
Yeah, exactly. It doesn't, anyway, it doesn't work. It's like, no.
I'm waiting for the reports from people who go to Vegas and pay to do Elon's cars in a tunnel thing, and it won't process their payments. Yes. But I'm using X.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, yeah, he thinks he can do everything better than everybody else. So
yeah.
Yep, I love this quote from him from back in 24. I'm talking about you won't need a bank account.
But only it's a bank account.
Yeah.
I mean, he does have a dwindling but present fan club that will sign up for this.
Yep.
That said, the last 5 years, he has lost a considerable amount of goodwill.
With some people, not with others.
Not with the tech bros.
Not with others, apparently.
I mean, in general.
Yeah. Okay.
Like I said, he still has his diehards, but I don't think this audience has the audience I think it does, because there's also a lot of people who now do not trust him in the least.
Yep.
Well, yeah, and keep in mind, this is not a bank. And they're making it very clear this is not a bank. So this is...
But we're a bank. But we're not a bank.
But we're not a bank. So, this doesn't fall under banking regulations.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't
There's no security for any money that you put into this system.
Yeah. So if Elon, you put your paycheck in and it goes belly up, or he needs cash, then he'll just do it.
Then you're just out.
Yep. Funny. I think we should move on. I had a story as well, but I think I'm gonna leave it in the show notes for this episode. It's something close to Ben, Minnesota hacking water utilities. Instead, we're going to go, not Minnesota hacked water utilities. Someone hacked Minnesota's water utilities. instead, we're going to, I wanted to clarify that so nobody gets confused. Instead, we're going to head over to the hang jury that we already mentioned. As I said, different topic today. It is a Google topic today. So Google spent more than 20 years scraping every website on the planet, actually, to build a multiple trillion-dollar search empire. This week, a judge threw out Google's lawsuit trying to stop a company called SERP API, great name, from scraping, you guessed it, Google. Yes, that Google. Their argument, so Google's argument, was the DMCA's anti-circumvention clause. The judge's response was, well, that's a cool story, but where's the copyrighted work that you're protecting? SearchGuard, which is the anti-scraping tool, is just a CAPTCHA. It blocks bots, but it does not block copyright infringement. Google doesn't even claim that its search results are copyrightable. So Google scraped every blog post, every news article, every small business website on the internet, and now it wants to claim the web it built is too precious to be scraped back. And the best part, this ruling wasn't even about whether Google should be scraped. It was about whether Google gets to use copyright law as a weapon to stop it. So here's the question for the panel for you. When a company that built its entire empire on taking without asking suddenly decides it deserves protection, who exactly is the hypocrite here?
Oh.
Let me guess. That's a trick question. Yes.
Google.
I'm going to wait for Jeff's answer because I know I'm uncertain about mine.
Yes.
So Jeff.
All right. Yeah. Well, then I'll give you a setup, Marty. Okay. So all this content is out on the internet. Google has scraped all of this content so that they can have their database to give you crappy search results.
Yes.
And now another company is scraping through what Google scraped.
Yes.
Okay. This is not a copyright issue. Now, if this company went in and started scraping through or accessing Google's algorithms, and started using their algorithms, that would be an issue because now they're getting into Google's proprietary properties.
Yeah.
If they're just getting into the information that's already there.
The search results, I think, at the end, right?
Yeah, they're just looking at search results.
Yeah.
Then no, I do not see that as a copyright issue at all.
Yeah. I mean, that's exactly it. Like, I mean, there is another side to that. I mean, you could argue, and I think Google's argument, or they tried that, was, well, I mean, we invested a lot of money scraping this content, so in a way, it's ours, right? We own it, so it's protected. I haven't read the lawsuit, but I'm just imagining that's what they say.
I'm guessing that's the gist of it.
Yeah. So the question, like, is that true? I mean, just because they invested in it, do they own it? Same thing that goes for the, I mean, we had the topic last week before about AI models. Yeah, training. Yeah, it's like, is that, I mean, there it was very clear. It's not copyright. It's fair use what they're doing. It's just they cannot steal the content from legal sources. Mm-hmm.
And and SERP AI is not, at least in the court's eyes, mm-hmm. not Google's eyes.
Yeah.
They're not stealing. They are accessing the same publicly available data that Google accessed.
Yeah. And they're also not circumventing copyright because there is no copyright on that.
Right.
Yeah, I questioned when I saw this was going to be part of the discussion. Just this morning, I was running through Reddit, and they posted an article or a link where there was a discussion about AI companies buying books by the thousands.
Yeah.
Cutting them up, running them through scanners. And I'm like, there's got to be copyright issues with that.
Yeah, apparently not.
Yet.
we talked about it last week. Judges said no, it's not. As long as you
because they're destroying the print, the dead tree versions, while retaining the electronic versions, and that's the key part for that.
Yeah,
they have the same information. They just changed its format, mm-hmm. and then they're not redistributing the print copy.
Yeah.
Like it's literally not accessible to anyone, even the purchaser.
Yeah.
Outside of the company. In the technical data world that we live in now, is copyright a artifact of the past? Something that you can't really hold on to anymore?
I think it's in some ways more nebulous than it was.
Yes.
Copyright...
I mean, it used to be very clear, right?
Yeah, it used to be clear. Yeah. Laws are slow to catch up with technology. And I think where we are right now, we're in that phase where the legal system is being forced to address copyright issues. And they're having to adapt and learn. And I think we have a long way to go before this gets resolved.
Yeah.
So that we can look at digital copyright in the same, with the same confidence that we look at print copyright.
Yeah, and it's not just digital copyright. I mean, digital copyright has been around for a while, and there's laws for it. Like, I mean, if you write something today, like a blog post, for example, or if you write an ebook, right, something you've done, there is clear copyright protections on that, unless you state otherwise, of course, but usually. Mm-hmm. But I think in the age of AI, it gets I mean, really messy because, I mean, as I said, we just had the discussion about fair use in training models on copyrighted work. But also the content that's created by AI, like, under what protection does that fall? Is that now copyrighted work? Like, if you, Jeff, let's say, I know you would never do that, but let's say you just generated an entire book, top to bottom, it's all AI, and you publish it. Is it now copyrighted by you, or is it copyrighted by, let's say Anthropic, because you use their model maybe? That's an unanswered question.
Yeah, right? And well, in some cases it is answered because the terms of service for certain types of content creation, depending on the model you're using,
gives
copyright to the model creator. And so, yeah, so then you have a situation where you've created something that you think is yours,
but it
actually belongs to Anthropic or OpenAI
Okay, whoever. Separate story then. I mean, then it's again clear by contract law, but not by like copyright law.
Yeah, but there's a lot of vagary in there still.
Yes.
And this is a question that, yes, we do not have a clear answer to yet, and we won't for a while. And I think part of the problem with getting us to that real answer is that we are to a degree anthropomorphizing the technology, and we're trying to equate how a human brain works to the way an AI model works. And how do you do that when first you really don't understand truly how your AI model is working, but also when we get down to that level, we don't understand how the human brain works.
True.
Yeah.
We don't.
So it's you can't really make that comparison because you don't understand how the elements work.
No, we don't know how our human creativity works either.
Right.
Yeah, and I mean, they have been, what is it called? There's a name for that. It's basically if like two people can independently invent the same thing. Like,
it, which without happens knowing, all the time.
Yeah, exactly. So like it's... That's something that can happen. We don't know why or how exactly, but it happens, and there's nothing wrong with that, right? Two people can do that.
Well, I mean, you're the brain guy thinking, "Wow, look at you, idiots!" I'm sorry. I spoke over your joke, Marty. I'm sorry.
No, that's all right.
Your joke was good.
Yeah, just ask George Harrison.
Yeah,
I mean, it'd be divergent development because basically, I mean, it's divergent evolution, but in creativity.
Yeah. So as I said, there's still work to be done by lawmakers. Maybe we should focus on that instead of the fights we're having about not so important things like. Whether, like, example from the EU, since, like, that's maybe something people don't know about. Whether a vegan sausage can be called a sausage. Super important. Super, super important.
I bet that has come to fisticuffs.
Fisticuffs, lawsuits, like, all of that. Like, it's really, really important topic.
Yeah, vegan sausages can be called to other people's dinner tables. Yeah.
So, Ben, what does your office manager think on this topic?
No, Leo, it is not kitty time.
Not interested, apparently.
Just because you're sick does not mean you get to interrupt the show.
that's exactly what it means.
Exactly. Yeah, that's who says that. It's literally in the bylaws for this show.
Yeah.
Office managers can at any point interrupt the show and take over the world.
Yep. Yep.
All right.
This is the way.
This is the way. I think the way forward is we should talk about some cool things and some drops. So, Marty, you have a cool app for us today.
Yeah, this is an app called AppTrust Preview. And it's, Ginsburg told me that it was in SetApp, but I could not find it in SetApp. So I'm going back to the Apple page, and the link that I have there is part of the Apple page setup, and it's $3. And it's well worth the $3 if you're concerned about, you know, what you get when you load an app and when you look at it is you get some information about what it's going to do. This really scans the app. So I put in Mail Maven, and I've got it on my screen over here. Let me pull it over here. And everything, the good signs are the main executable is signed and verified. The main executable uses hardened runtime. Mm-hmm. There are some things with privacy access issues, like can ask to read contacts, makes sense. Can ask to control other apps, declares network access.
Yeah, it has Apple script support. So
and then it goes to Apple safety checks, and it talks about the safety checks that Apple has done on it, who signed it, Small Cubed Incorporated. But it gives you a massive amount of information about apps that you don't get any other way. Well worth the $3 if you're concerned about what's going on with the apps and what issues there might be potentially that'll challenge you having it on your system. So,
Marty, I'm going to back you up on it's not actually on the App Store.
On SetApp.
I'm sorry, on SetApp. Thank you.
Yeah. SetApp.
Yeah. I'm sitting here digging through, trying tons of different search terms.
Yeah.
Beyond just the name, and I cannot find AppTrust Preview on SetApp.
Yeah.
Maybe it used to be there and it's not now. I don't know.
Could be.
I don't know. But
or maybe,
For $3.
Maybe they've dreamed that it was there and it's not.
Could be. Yeah.
For $3, it's not a subscription. You got it, you own it.
Yeah. That's nice.
And I think a real cool app.
Very cool. Nice.
My search did turn up, though, that MarsEdit is available on SetApp.
SetApp, yeah.
And MarsEdit is super cool for managing your blog content.
Yeah. The only catch is you have to use it 65 million years ago.
No, that's okay.
I got that reference.
Yeah, I get that.
Jeff, I think your app could be looked at with AppTrust Preview, but it's also on SetApp, actually.
Yeah.
Yes, mine is on SetApp, and mine is Permute, which is it's one of those apps that you don't need it till you need it, and then you love it.
Yes.
So Permute, think of it like a Rosetta Stone for file formats. Mm-hmm. So you have a movie or video. This is how I use it.
Yeah.
I think that's exactly what it is. It's a media converter.
Yeah.
You can throw like PDFs and stuff into it. But you need to convert a video or an audio file from one format to another.
Or an
graphic
image
from one format to another. Yeah. You just drop it onto Permute, tell it what format you need it in, and let it do its thing.
Yeah. And it has really cool options. Like if you, need to change the size of something, have a maximum, maximum upload size, for example. You're like, okay, I want to upload this image, but it has to be 2 megs or less because some stupid website wants you to. You just drop it on there, say, okay, maximum 2 megabytes, and it will figure it out.
Yeah, it's super cool. Yeah. I've been using it for years, and it's just been super useful. I don't even know what it costs to buy 15. Because I've been using it through Setapp.
Yeah,
and, it's $14.99. Setapp
didn't. Oh, okay. I would buy it if it wasn't available through Setapp.
Yeah, I use it all the time. It's like converting. Like I have a whatever. I need the audio from a show recording, for example. I'll just drop the video on Premiere and say just extract the whatever AAC out of that.
Yeah.
Done.
Yeah,
takes no time at all. Yeah. It's done. Super easy to use. That's it.
Okay. I'd like to say that the icon is kind of creepy to me. However, icon is so iconic. Yes. That when I see it, it's like, I know what that is.
Yeah. No, I can see that. It's definitely a little bit creepy, but in a fun way. Like it's creepy fun, like the colors and everything. So
it's more creepy when you go to the Permute website because the icon for the app, it's doing this slow float up and down bounce sort of thing.
And that now I see that.
It's a subtle thing, and once you see it, you're like, "Okay, now it's creepy."
Yeah. Okay, could be good.
Yeah. Okay, Jeff. Sweet dreams, Ben.
Sweet dreams.
Yes. Yeah, I already have nightmares from yesterday's Strange New Worlds. Thank you, Jeff.
Oh, thank me too.
You're welcome.
Me too.
Yeah, but on a serious note, I have been using Handbrake since the beginning of time.
What would be awesome tool?
I know. What would be the upside for someone who is like me, a long-term Handbrake user, to switch to Permute?
I think you should take something that you're going to process through Handbrake and try processing it through Permute and see what you think about the options in the final output file.
Yeah,
because I would say it's because they're both really good tools. Yeah, yeah. I mean, yeah, Permute is super easy to use.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I would.
But it's easy for me to recommend Handbrake and Permute.
Yeah, both good tools.
It's been a while. Handbrake since
is
I've
more
used...
of a video thing, though.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So if you have additional content you want to convert, Permute does let you process more file types.
Yeah, and you can even drop like multiple different things on it and be like all in one big batch and say, I don't know, image, video, this format or whatever. You can do that. It's actually quite capable. Yeah,
I haven't used Handbrake in years because I stopped ripping DVDs a while ago. But I remember the interface, and occasionally I go in there to try some stuff. I remember the interface, and Handbrake is a pretty bare bones kind of. I don't want to say bare bones. It's got lots of optional things that I don't understand to click. Mm-hmm. Whereas Permute is, you drop it in, it creates, it's just much easier in terms of small pull downs to make decisions on what you want to do.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, exactly.
And it does static images. So
it does. Ben, let's talk about some content. And Ben has a really cool one for us.
Oh, yeah. So I went and saw this yesterday, and it is Spider-Man Brand New Day. If this is pretty much the movie where he transitions from the Iron Spider to the Spider-Man we all know and love. And this is Peter not only accepting Peter, but going to a point where he accepts his mutations, accepts fully being Spider-Man, and also has a really awesome X-Men created or X-Men related storyline on the side.
Hmm. He also kind of becomes an adult, right? It's kind of part of that story.
Yeah.
Like full on. Like adult. Yeah.
Yep. The other things I like about it, if you thought Michelle Zendaya's character was a little bit annoying the first trilogy, She is a much more grown up, very different person this time around.
That's good.
Who, yeah. Who, I won't spoil anything, but she's definitely going to be a part of it going forward, but maybe not the part that you think.
Okay. Well, it'll be interesting.
Yep. John Bernthal as the Punisher. People are think he would be completely toned down on this. With the exception of making a hilarious reference that he can't use the F word. This is 100% the Netflix Punisher. He is awesome in it. He gets a couple funny moments too.
Nice.
And I would say the same for Mark Ruffalo as Bruce Banner / the Hulk. It's other characters are used really well. And, you know, our villain, God, the name of the actor escapes me. I'm sorry. The guy from Severance.
Oh,
which guy from Severance?
What is called? Not Adam Sandler.
No, like something Trammell or something. I forget.
Adam McKay.
No. But let me put it this way. If you look up William Metzger, Marvel, you get a pretty good idea of who this guy is.
Interesting.
Yeah, but and also there is a post-credit scene, but honestly, it's one you really don't need to see. Okay, yeah, but yeah, cool. This was my favorite. This might have been my favorite Spider-Man movie, just not just the MCU ones.
Right, I'll probably go watch it then, because I wasn't sure about it, but I'll go watch it. All right.
I'm falling so far behind on my movies. I haven't seen Mandalorian and Grogu. I haven't seen Supergirl, Woman of Tomorrow, and now Spider-Man.
Well,
is that,
I mean, but Jeff, for you that is kind of normal, right? Because yeah. I mean you're 20 years behind TV shows, so.
Oh, that's fair.
Yeah, I mean for Mandalorian and Grogu, it's basically just a feature length episode of the show anyway, so it's probably better seen on your home TV.
Mm. Well, that's where it's going to get seen.
Yeah.
But I mean, Supergirl was good as long as you have expectations from the Woman of Tomorrow comic book,
which I've read and loved.
Yeah,
yeah, very cool. All right, mine is also a content. It's a TV show. It's a new show with Octavia Spencer and Hannah Waddingham, which you might know from some other really cool Apple TV shows, for example. So it's basically two best friends. They've been best friends for 20 years, Debbie and what's her name now? I'm blanking. Debbie and Judith. Yeah, Judith is her name. They've been like friends for 20 years. Like Debbie is American, so Octavia Spencer. Judith is a forensic accountant. They both live in London in the UK. But there is some secrets that get revealed. For one, one of them has been lying for, well, over 20 years and has a secret identity. And what happens next is a very interesting character development and a very interesting spy story that happens all around Europe. So they travel around Europe, and try to figure out what's going on. what's really happening, who's scheming against whom. The third in that trio is Bill Nighy as the director, which is I would say morally ambiguous person, which he plays so well.
That is 100% the ideal Bill Nighy role.
Exactly. And yeah, there's some interesting twists and turns and some really heartwarming stuff. And it's just, I binged it because it was really this good. And the chemistry between, especially the two best friends, like the Octavia Spencer and Hannah Waddingham, is just great. And I mean, Hannah Waddingham as let's call it secret agent. It's just great. She does it so well.
Yeah.
So
Patrice, you had me at Octavia Spencer and Hannah Waddingham.
Yes.
And then I didn't need Bill more Nighy either. In on the side, it was like, yeah. Well, now you just put icing on this cake of deliciousness.
Yes. I didn't need more. I was like, those two sold. Like, it doesn't matter. They read if they read the phone book for what is it, 10 episodes, something like that.
I'd buy it.
I'll buy it. Yeah. It's on Prime Video.
I caught a preview of this or some advertisement of this, and I thought, yeah, this could be up my alley.
Yeah.
And more importantly, my wife's alley. I think she would really enjoy this. I mean, not that I won't enjoy it, but it's always hard to find things that we can both talk about because we like completely different genres.
Yeah. Yeah. It's absolutely, I think, would be for both of you. It's like it's 8 episodes, by the way, and it's jam packed with like a lot of there's action, there's like heart, there's heartbreak, there's like people getting killed, like everything you would expect. So
I like it already.
Yeah, great show. As I said, I had it on my list when I saw it came out. I was like, okay, I gotta watch it, and I could not stop. Like literally,
all right, I'm gonna check it out.
All right. I think that's the end of this very show. We're good on time, so that's perfect. We should let the people know where you can be found, where people can figure out more about you, where they can listen to other things you're doing. So let's go the other way around. Let's start with Jeff. How about you?
All right. Well, how about on jeffgamet.com and freshbrewtales.com? And then as Jay Gamet on the various social medias, except LinkedIn, where I'm Jeff Gamet. And then I'll just hit two shows today. So let's go with Dave Ginsberg's In Touch with iOS. And Patrice, I know one of the shows you'll bring up. So instead of bringing that one up, I will bring up The Context Machine, the show that I do with Grant Chapman.
Yes, where Brian is usually wrong. No, wait a second. I think that was you.
Yeah. Well, Brian is certain I'm always wrong, and I don't want to hurt his ego. So I go ahead and let him think that.
Oh, okay. Cool. Thanks for being here. And Ben, where can people find out more about you?
Well, you can find me at Ben Rethig on social media. My ratings and ravings on RethicTech.com. And as always, here on the Tech Hangout.
Very cool. Thank you, Ben. Thanks for being here. And Marty, tell us again about your new show, because I think people need to hear it.
Well,
and all the other shows.
Well, you can find all the stuff on thepodtalk.net. I'm actually trying to edit it to get this show in, we'll get that up soon. So thepodtalk.net is the website. I've been doing a show with Cindy Rotz called Fade to Chat. We're in our 40th episode or something, somewhere around that, where we look at classic movies. Sometimes I pick one she hasn't seen. Sometimes she picks one I haven't seen. Sorry, guys, I stole that from you. But often we will pick ones that we both like or both question. So we've been doing that for about 30 episodes. And then, of course, I went to MacStock and someone suggested the idea of having a parallel show that you could cross promote. So Fade to Chat is the full-length kind of movie show. And then I know what movies we're going to do. I go ahead and put together a 8-minute little clip of me talking about, if you're a counselor, this is one particular scene that you might want to look at. And it describes this kind of condition that humans have. And I keep it short, keep it to about 8 minutes. And as I said, we're going to be doing Bridge on the River Kwai on Monday. So that'll be out Monday afternoon. And I'll follow it with one scene, which is the show, the sister episode that talks about the psychological approach to working with this. So
very cool.
Other things you can find again at thepodtalk.net. You can connect with me at Jencius, J-E-N-C-I-U-S, on Mastodon or Blue Sky.
Very cool. Thank you. Yeah. I was just thinking when you were explaining like your website or whatever, I'm like, there used to be this, what was it, $1 million website? You have the million podcast website at some point.
Well, yeah, this is my encouragement to finally retire from my real job.
So you can do more podcasts. I absolutely agree.
Yeah, this is where kind of the design and the passion goes right now. Yeah, so
very cool. You can find me and more about me on my website. ThePatrice.com will take you there. Podcasts, projects, social media links, whole page of cool things or drops from all kinds of different shows over the years. It's all there, including, well, soon after the show, the one I picked today. And a very special episode today on Retro Rewatch. We have two very special episodes planned for this week and for next week because it's the 99th and the 100th episode of Retro Rewatch. And episode 99 is out now, so go listen to it. And it is a very special episode with our very first guest on the show. Oh, awesome. You also have the stickers.
Like that sticker.
I love that sticker. Very special episode with a very special guest because Dave Ginsberg was on the show with us. Yes. And we watched, since we're in the season break of Stargate SG-1 between season 4 and season 5, we watched Chuck, the show. Not Chuck Joyner, but the show Chuck. Which, if you have not heard of it, it's a lot of fun. It's kind of a geek turned superhero, kind of, you could call it.
Secret agent.
Secret agent. Yeah, secret agent is better. Like geek turned secret agent. A lot of fun. I always go to like a local Buy More because of that show, because that's what what Best Buy kind of is called there. And we watched the first two episodes because we kind of had to do two. That didn't make any other sense. I was a bit crammed to get them into a normal, more or less normal show length. But Dave was there. He absolutely loves the show and he wanted to do it with us. And we're like, let's do it. And then next week, there will be episode 100, a very special interview. I'm not telling you with whom and about what, but there will be a very special interview next week, Friday, same time. So by this time next week, when we do the tech hangout, there will be another really cool Retro Rewatch episode. So
you can look forward to find out who we interview.
You don't remember. You get it out of order anyway. So,
I'll remember, just not in the right order.
Exactly.
It'll be Teal'c.
Yep, maybe.
Yeah, but we don't let him actually say anything.
Exactly, because he does all he gets to do is do Teal'c wiki lines.
Yes, the only thing he can say, follow up anything you say with indeed.
Exactly. So for this very show, by the way, we also have social media, Blue Sky at thetechhangout.com. We have Mastodon at thetechhangout at techhangout.social. We're live streaming every week on Twitch, twitch.tv/thetechhangout, and also on YouTube at techhangout show, because the other ones were all taken for some reason.
By Marty.
Don't think so. It was just like random.
I know that, trying to come up with YouTube channel names.
Yeah, but I had it. At Tech Hangout Show is the right one. And of course, our website, thetechhangout.com, is where you can find all the shows. And also, if you ever want to, like, wondering how to find the live stream, thetechhangout.com/live. It's where you will find links to the live streams. And with that, thank you so much for another great show. Thanks for listening, and see you next week.